All right, I'm here this afternoon with Congressman Jeff Duncan. He is up in there in Washington, D.C. How you doing today, Congressman Jeff Duncan?
Anne, I'm doing okay. Thanks for having me on your show. It's great to call from the Beltway here and sort of give an update of what's going on here in D.C.
Well, I tell you what, every time you turn on the TV or look on the internet, the news is just pouring out. I kind of think we've got almost like a dike situation where the dike is breaking down and all these holes are popping out. What's going on?
Well, at least the Obama administration thinks there's a lot of holes in the dike, and Americans have known there have been issues for quite a while, but when you see the IRS scandal and what they're calling the IRS gate now of certain groups, especially conservative groups, being targeted by the IRS and their 501c4 tax exempt status being held up because they have words like patriot or in their name, or they read the Constitution and study that. It's amazing that they were targeted by an administration. And then you throw on top of that the fact that the AP and Fox News and others have had their phone records perused and they didn't get a subpoena, so to speak. They didn't go and get a court warrant or a warrant from the court. They just got the phone records from the phone company looking into an issue. But we have to wonder about privacy, and we have to wonder about due process. So you throw that in on top of Benghazi and the whistleblowers and more information coming out about the fact that the White House did have some involvement in changing the talking points that Ambassador Rice used on 5 Sunday talk shows about a month away from the election, and what the intent was for changing those talking points about Benghazi and what actually happened in Benghazi. And then you have Boston bombing and the fact that a friend of the actual bombers was shot dead today by the FBI during an interrogation process down in Florida. So it's, a lot going on, Ann.
There is a lot going on, and I know that Diane Belsom from over there with the Lawrence Tea Party went up there to Washington last week.
She did, and it was an honor for me to stand with her at a press conference that we did about the IRS issue targeting groups like the Lawrence County Tea Party Patriots. And I'll give you another example, the Patriot Guard Riders, which are a nonpartisan, non-political group that basically are former military folks that ride motorcycles, and they like to escort fallen heroes and fallen soldiers to their funeral and stand in honor of those folks during the funeral with American flags, because they are called the Patriot Guard Riders. Their 501c4 status had been held up as well. So we're not just talking about political groups or folks that study the Constitution and talk about government and government's intrusion and Obamacare and those sort of things. We're talking about a group here that honors fallen soldiers. They were targeted as well. So this is a very broad, wide-ranging spectrum of folks that were targeted for, slow walking or holding up their application for tax-exempt status.
Well, not only that, asking for a lot more information than you would think would be necessary to determine whether to grant nonprofit status or not. I mean, it seems
I think you hit on it right there. The crux of it is that they are asking a lot of questions about the members of the group, their family, what did you pray about? What was the subject of your prayer? What sort of speakers have you had? Where do they come from? It's amazing the amount of information that they've asked through their questionnaires over a period of time. And Congressman Tom Graves from Georgia has a copy of a list of questions that was asked by the IRS to one of the groups in his area. And he started tweeting those questions out last week. I think he's going to start back this week. But it's kind of interesting to see the type of questions they're asking.
Absolutely. Now, we're going through all this, but who actually, is the IRS a underneath Congress, or I thought they were a separate organization? How do they flow in the flow of things?
Well, they're actually an agency, an Internal Revenue Service, just like the EPA, and they're charged with collecting the taxes that the statute requires them to collect, whether it's corporate or personal income tax, and they are they're managed just like every other agency by the administration. They are the executive branch does have executive power, just like a CEO, to direct those agencies.
Well, one of the things that I just wondered, who would actually fire somebody in the IRS? Would it have to be the president then?
It would be the president or their immediate supervisor. And in this case, the Treasury Department actually has an inspector general that did a investigation into this whole issue of targeting certain groups. And so you saw Lois Lerner at a speaking engagement, I think, last week, knowing that the inspector general's report was coming out the next day. They planted someone in the crowd to ask her a question about groups being targeted so they could go ahead and reveal that they had been targeting to try to get out on ahead of the IG report so that they could spin this thing in the direction they wanted to go. Well, that didn't happen, and that's starting to bite them in the butt now.
So. Sure. And, of course, she was on Capitol Hill today saying that she's done nothing wrong and then pleaded the took the fifth on stuff. So, and I understand Trey Gowdy got pretty upset when ISA let her leave the room.
He did. Apparently, I talked to Trey a little while on the floor. Just a few minutes ago about that, and he should have been. He should have been upset because his understanding of the Fifth Amendment and your ability not to incriminate yourself, and then you give an opening statement, so you begin that process. When can you invoke the Fifth, and are we in a court of law, or is this a congressional oversight hearing? So I think a lot of questions are left to be asked and answered about her testimony or lack thereof.
Absolutely. Now, you know, one of the things I was thinking about, since they're talking about putting Obamacare, the collecting of the tax or that you have health care or you don't have health care, putting that in the hands of the IRS, you know, one of the things that is very apparent is Nancy Pelosi was able to grant exempt status to a lot of businesses that didn't want to have to carry Obamacare. But that doesn't work when you have to pay taxes. I don't think a congressman can make the decision that you can or cannot have to pay taxes. So doesn't it be...
you're exactly right. I mean, and so she tried to exempt them, but now that the court has ruled that it's not, the Supreme Court ruled that it's not a penalty, it actually is a tax. And the IRS will be the tax collecting organization.
So all those so will they still be able to maintain their tax exempt status for Obamacare or not? Or do you know, Jeff?
Well, normally if you're a tax exempt organization, you're not providing health insurance benefits necessarily. Like, and I say that in the genre of the Tea Party or the Patriot Guard riders and some of the groups that were targeted by the IRS. Now, there are nonprofit organizations like Sierra Club and others that probably do provide benefits for their employees. They have payroll, and it's interesting. It will be interesting to see how that tax is applied to those type of organizations.
Well, plus, I know that organizations have gone before, and whether they are a for-profit organization or not, have been able to get to be exempted from having to implement Obamacare. Am I right on that?
You might be, and you're more informed about how Obamacare is going to be implemented at those levels than I am at this point. So.
Well, I just was concerned about it. If a congressperson can give you the right to have to carry Obamacare or not, that does not apply to the taxes that we have to pay to the IRS as far as our income tax, etc. That could be very unwieldy and could be put forth very unfairly to organizations.
Well, it's not just one congressperson. They would have had to have written that into the law as they drafted it, and that was voted on by the entire Congress.
Sure.
So it wasn't just Nancy Pelosi.
Oh, no. I'm just saying. I was using that as an example.
Yeah, but. So here's the deal. We voted over 30 times to repeal this. We realize how bad Obamacare is to businesses and individuals in this country. We don't want to deny health care to folks, but I believe, and a lot of Republicans believe, that there are more free market solutions. If we get the government out of the way, the water will level, so to speak. There will be an optimal position where insurance is provided, groups will pull together, there will be associational health care, allow you to own your policy and cross state lines with it. There are a lot of other things that we could do in this nation before we grant this government huge amounts of power to be very invasive in their questioning and understanding and controlling of our individual lives, which is what Obamacare would do. And if anyone wants to just, you know, realize how convoluted the application of Obamacare is going to be, go to Forbes.com, and there was an article there recently about Obamacare and how it would apply down to small businesses and how it would affect individuals with the taxes we talked about earlier. Just the article itself confused me, not necessarily Obamacare as a whole, just that little bit of facet that Forbes was talking about. So as we move forward and this thing gets more and more put in place, and people are going to realize the reporting requirements and what the doctors are going to have to do and the fact that they aren't able to keep their own insurance or that the premium's gone up 400%. And everything the president said about if you like the insurance you have, you'll be able to keep that is just bunk, because the insurance companies are going to end up folding up and doing something different. So those individuals are going to fall up under Obamacare and the health care exchanges that aren't set up by the states. The federal government's going to have to set up this exchange, this marketplace. Well, do you truly have a marketplace when you only have a limited number of vendors in that marketplace?
Absolutely. Now, just real quick on the IRS, and then I want to move on. What can be done to make sure that this type of activity doesn't happen again, Jeff? I mean, you know, is there, or can they just become more covert and we just don't know about it?
Well, you know, we're beginning an oversight function of the IRS. I think this will show that we need to, I think Congress needs to have a more active role in oversight. But a lot of us feel like, let's just abolish the IRS. Let's go with a more simple tax system, whether it's a fair tax, where it's a consumption tax that you pay as you go. And so every night when you go to bed with a comfort that your taxes are paid, because you paid them if you consumed or bought anything during the day. Or some sort of flat tax, which, you know, simpler, flatter, fairer. You know, whether it's a 15% flat tax and you pay your taxes and you do your income tax return on a 3x5 card. Here's what I made. Here's the percentage you're charging me. My check's attached. And you sign it and send it off. You know, it needs to be, to pay your government, the taxes that you owe them should be a lot fairer, simpler, and flatter.
Absolutely. Well, I hope we get there, but I know a lot of us out here are wondering just where this is all going to lead. And, you know, I know that now it's up to senior officials there in the White House. The president is still saying he didn't know, but it seems to be going right up the chain there.
It does. And I think if he didn't know, the chief of staff probably knew. And if the chief of staff knew, why didn't the president know? Are they truly keeping him that much out of the loop? Is he truly just the speech giver in chief and not the executive of this country? Does he truly remain out of touch on those issues? And then you go back to Benghazi. You know, where was he the night that Benghazi was going? Why wasn't he in the Situation Room? Why wasn't he more active? Who gave a stand down order? Is this president that out of touch with what's going on underneath him?
Yeah, I like that comment that they made, that Pfeiffer made Sunday morning. I don't know what room he was in the White House. I thought that was a great comment. I mean, here you would have
Well, I know what room he wasn't in, and that was a Situation Room,
right,
where he could have active role in either, you know, bringing forces to bear on the enemy and protecting the four Americans who ultimately lost their lives. We know he wasn't involved in that room.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, he couldn't remember what room he was in, so... But moving on, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that are that you've been working on. I understand that you have a House committee, the Natural Resource Committee, approved the Outer Continental Shelf Transboundary Hydrocarbon Agreement Authorization Act, and this has to do with energy that you can get right off the coast of Mexico. And you had told me a little earlier, we're still talking about that Alaskan pipeline. What's happening on those fronts?
Well, I'll take them in reverse order. We're voting today on another authorization bill on the Keystone XL pipeline to bring friendly Canadian oil down to the refineries where we have the capacity to refine those barrels of oil into the products that we enjoy, not only gasoline, but all the plastics and other products that come out of a barrel of hydrocarbons. So we're working on that. We're going to pass that again today, and I think America's starting to realize that 20,000 jobs will be created probably $200 million investment. I mean, it's just a tremendous economy booster by putting folks to work, building that pipeline. The administration's it's been over, I think, 1,700 days or close to it since that application was originally filed. Been over 15,000 pages of environmental study and other things, the most studied pipeline in the history of this country, and it still is not approved. So we're working on that today. I may go to the floor in a little while and speak on that if you're watching C-SPAN. But and then the first thing you asked about is a mouthful, is the Trans-Boundary Hydrocarbon Agreement, basically. I mean, if you can think of a border, like our U.S.-Mexican border, but think about the maritime border, the border that's out in the middle of the ocean where the territorial waters of the U.S. meet the territorial waters of Mexico. And we know there are resources along that border, that hydrocarbon resources, oil and natural gas. Well, who owns those? Does Mexico own those? Does the U.S. own those? They're on the border. So we entered an agreement back in 2012. The Obama administration entered an agreement with Mexico to jointly work on recovering those resources and revenue sharing and safety requirements and environmental requirements and other things along that maritime border. Well, just because they signed an agreement doesn't mean that the United States and Mexico are actually going out there and starting a lease sale and beginning production because the agreement was never implemented. And we waited on Ken Salazar, the Secretary of the Interior, to provide the implementing language to us to vote on, which Congress has a responsibility in that, and they never brought it. And the administration was really debating whether this agreement was a treaty or whether it was truly an agreement. And so once we got off the treaty, which would require the United States Senate to ratify, and understood that it is an agreement, what is the process for implementing those type agreements? And so this bill that I drafted and with Chairman Doc Hastings and Chairman Matt Salmon from the Foreign Affairs Committee will open up those areas and will implement that agreement. We'll say, all right, here's the agreement. Here's how the United States is going to put in place the aspects of leasing that area and beginning production or exploration and production of those hydrocarbon resources, and how you share those revenues with Mexico, which has joint ownership, how Mexico develops those resources, how they share with us, safety, environmental concerns. So we'll get that implemented, but also this is a model and for how future agreements will be implemented by the United States government. So it's sort of a landmark piece of legislation in that for all future agreements like this, this will be how we'll handle it as a nation. So that's a talking point that's not discussed very much up here, but one thing I'm proud of is that, you know, going forward, we've got a way to implement these agreements.
Absolutely. And I also know you introduced some legislation about a census bill. And what exactly, it's called what, the Census Reform Act of 2013? What's that one about, Jeff?
Well, it actually was inspired by a constituent. We had somebody that received the American Community Survey in the mail, which is a 20-something page document where they ask a lot of invasive personal questions about you and your family and your spending habits or your driving route to work, what time you leave to take the kids to school, what time you get home, just all kinds of very invasive and personal questions. And so I said, you know what, the Constitution only requires the government to do a head count every 10 years so that we can apportion or decide how many congressmen each state has.
Correct.
And so that's the constitutional role of government. There it is in the Constitution, the census. And so I said, you know what, we ought to roll back a lot of these censuses and get back to the Constitution. I'm getting beat up because we're ending some economic census and unemployment census and agricultural census. And, well, maybe we ought to start thinking about whether the government should do and mandate these censuses. And if you don't comply with those, there is a penalty of law up to $5,000. Now, I don't know that penalty has actually ever been collected in South Carolina, but in the law, there is a penalty up to $5,000 for not completing the American Community Survey. And so I said, really? We're going to have a survey, and you're going to ask all these invasive questions that people don't want to answer, and you're going to put them under threat of the law, that they're going to be fined, maybe their property attached for not filling out a census? I thought that was very un-American. So anyway, that's what the bill does. I'm getting beat up by the left and the progressives who want all that information on us. They want to know what when we leave for school and how many kids and dogs we have and how many guns we have and other things. And they're going to continue asking more and more invasive questions, and I don't think that's right.
So what do you think will happen with this bill, Jeff?
Well, this is like a lot of bills up here. They probably won't go anywhere. If it does pass the House, it won't cross the Harry Senate. But it's a step in the right direction. Sometimes these things take a couple of terms in Congress to get passed. You have to, you know, you break the ice and then you start warming folks up to it. And you start educating people on how invasive the census is and what we should be doing as a nation based on the constitutional role of government. So it may take a while. I realize that. I've come from 8 years in the legislature in Columbia and my third year up here, so I realize that sometimes things take a little while, but we're talking about it. I just dropped the co-sponsor sheet off a little while ago that added some additional co-sponsors to the bill, so people are starting to warm up to it, and we'll see. We'll try to work it through the process.
Now, what do you think about the XL pipeline? Are we any closer to getting that done or not?
Well, this vote today will probably be a long, it might be bipartisan, but it'll probably be pretty close to being along partisan lines. The House will pass it, send it back to the Senate. I doubt Harry Reid will take it up because the President doesn't want Congress to force his hand on something he doesn't want to do. Although I believe there are elements within the administration and within the Department of Interior that and the Department of State that are closer to saying, you know, the Keystone XL pipeline isn't as bad as the left has made it out to be. But at the end of the day, the environmental lobby is going to be real strong against the administration never signing this. So I don't know. I know the American people go, why in the world aren't we building the Keystone pipeline? We already have hundreds of pipelines running through those same areas. Why not trade with our friends and neighbors to the north, our largest trading partner, the Canadians, and bring their hydrocarbons, their raw barrels of oil through the pipeline down here to our refineries where we're putting Americans to work and we're creating the products that we need.
Yeah, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And I'm also surprised, though, that Canada is still working and waiting.
Well, they're not going to wait much longer. That oil is going to get refined into gasoline products and other products somewhere. It'll either be on the Gulf Coast states of the U.S., by American workers, or they'll build that pipeline to the West Coast and they'll send it to China, and China will refine that and possibly enter in contracts to utilize that oil, and it won't help us out at all.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I know I'm going to let you go here, but I want to ask you one question. You know, we keep talking about, you were just talking about the constitutionality of these surveys and everything. And one of the questions that keeps coming up is the Constitution today still a viable document?
Absolutely it is.
I know, but people are talking about we don't even need the Constitution. We hear that from the left and everything. What do you think here?
Well, you know, the administration would rather us not use the Constitution. They'd rather not have to adhere to it. You know, I keep going back that the fact that we're a constitutional republic, not a dictatorship, and executive orders can be used to set up certain things that Congress has passed, but they're not to be used to make law and to have your dictatorial say on something. That's not what it's designed for. So I think the Constitution is as viable today as it ever has been. I think we as Americans need to go back and revisit that. We need to understand that we thrive under limited government, free markets, individual liberties. Go and read the Founding Fathers and understand why this country was formed and what makes this country great. And it isn't a big government. It isn't progressive social policies that take money out of mom and dad's pocketbook and give it away to people who aren't contributing to society, who aren't working. I'm not talking about the truly needy. I am talking about a big element of society that has just given up and they're on the dole. They're on the nanny state checkbook and they don't really contribute to society. That's not what the Constitutional Republic was set up by our founders to do. It was set up to create freedom and opportunity and limit that government, limit your taxes, limit the things the government are going to be involved in to unleash and unbridle that American entrepreneurial spirit and allow Americans to thrive and prosper and provide for their families and our nation. That's what makes America great. That's what I believe in. That's what I believe the Constitution was designed to do, and that's what I'm going to fight for every day.
Absolutely. And, you know, this weekend is Memorial Day weekend. I know you'd like to just say a few words out there to our veterans and for those that have gone before us.
Absolutely. We are so proud of all the people that have served our country and just honored. I'm going to be speaking in Wareshoals at their Memorial Day event at the Catfish Festival on Saturday morning, and be honored to do that. I'm sitting here looking at a picture on my desk of Tyrone Woods, who gave his life in Benghazi, former Navy SEAL, who was killed on a rooftop trying to protect the ambassador and the consulate there. So I'm very appreciative of everyone who has served, those who are currently serving as well, that are defending our freedoms, and really their families that are back here supporting them, because when they're away, standing on that wall, wherever it may be, defending me and my freedom, my family, their loved ones back home, their husband, wives, family, are taking care of business. They're paying the rent. They're paying the mortgage. They're providing for their children, getting them to school, getting them to the doctor. The families need to be remembered as well as the ones that are actually serving and the ones who have served.
Absolutely. Well, Congressman Jeff Duncan, always a pleasure to have you on my show, and have a great weekend and keep up the fight.
Well, Ann, thank you so much. I love Ann, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks so much, Jeff. Bye-bye.